Hi there, this is Vicki Ronchetti with The Confirmation Conversation, because who doesn't want to talk about dogs? Today we're going to be talking about training your dog or puppy in confirmation. This was a request that came up when on the Show Dog Prep School Facebook page, we asked for ideas for podcast topics because we really want to talk about what people want to hear about. So this was one that at first I thought, oh wow, how can I explain all this in one little podcast episode? But really, I started thinking about when I did a ton more in person. Like, I had a little training studio and people would come there with their show dogs and just book an appointment with me, and I wouldn't know what they needed. If they were somebody who had been showing for a long time and just needed help with a specific issue, or if it was somebody who actually didn't know anything. So if they said, look, I don't know anything, I got this dog, I told the breeder I would try and show it, and here I am, then I would tell them that everything the dog has to do in the show ring is basically going to fit into one of three categories: moving or gating, standing or stacking, and being touched by a stranger or the judge's exam. Now, of course, there's other things a show dog has to know how to do outside of the ring, like the whole grooming procedure, any grooming you have to do, getting their nails trimmed, riding in the car, being in a crate, staying in a hotel, potentially. All of those things, obviously, you have to train for. But we're talking about the behaviors in the show ring. So we're going to start with moving. And that's usually where I start with the moving piece, because I think it's, for a lot of people, easier to get than the stacking. So when we say moving, it means we want the dog to move at his proper speed, in the right position, and just the way that looks best for him. So that means we have to teach the dog how to move correctly so he's going to look his best in the ring, right? We call that gating. And the dog will do that generally when they walk in the ring. You might set the dog up and then the judge has them go all the way around. So they move there, and then after they're examined, they do their individual pattern, which could be a down and back or a diagonal or a triangle. Those are the most common ones. Then you come back to the judge, and then usually you move around again. So that moving is the gating, and the dog has to do that in a way that, you know, shows his best movement. So his head should be facing forward. It's nice if he's a little bit out in front of the owner. So it's not heel position and it's not looking at you. It's out a little bit with his head facing forward so the judge can see a full picture of the dog moving. So I do utilize clicker training a lot in my training, but not for everything. I use it when I think it will help the dog who's the learner and the person who, in my case, is also sometimes the learner, right? So if I'm training a dog, then I'm the trainer, my dog is the learner. But if I'm training a person to train their dog, they're both learners, right? So I need to train the human, and then the human is going to train the dog, and I'm going to help them do that. So I think that clickers or some kind of marker are very, very beneficial for teaching movement, because what happens a lot of the time is that the dog is moving right and then the owner goes to reinforce the dog, so they stop walking and give the dog a treat. It happens also with like heeling or loose leash walking. The dog's doing a good job, the owner stops to give him a treat, but what they're actually reinforcing then is the animal having stopped and standing there or stopped and looking at them. But if you click while the animal's moving, you're telling them that it was that behavior that you're paying for, right? So that's the beauty of a marker or a clicker. And in the zoo world and in a lot of other training worlds, it's called a bridge. And I really like that term because it's appropriate, it's correct. It's a bridge between the correct response and the delivery of the reinforcer. So a marker or a bridge or a clicker gives you the luxury of a moment to deliver that reinforcer to the animal. Now, if you're teaching a dog to sit in front of you, it's not hard to put the food in their mouth right when they sit, like you're right there and they're right in front of you. But if you want to teach an animal to like run away from you and do something at a distance or doing something when you're moving, I can be moving the dog. And let's say I'm working on getting his head straight. So he's looking forward. The moment his head drifts straight, I can click that. And then I'm going to follow it up by rewarding him with his head facing forward. But the clicker tells him when your head was forward, that's what I'm paying you for. And so a clicker can be really beneficial for that. And it does take some practice. You have to practice how you're going to gather up the lead in your hand. You're going to have to decide where your arm's going to go. With people who are new, I do think that having your arm, your left arm, in a specific position can be beneficial to the dog, because if you're learning and you're trying to figure it out, if you're not somehow grounding yourself and really making your body language clean, it might be confusing to the dog. So I used to be like, oh, just let it be organic and everything, you know, do it how it feels good for you. But sometimes I have to tell people to actually take their left arm and anchor it to their body, right? So your left arm just glues to the side of your body. Then you bring your arm straight up in front of you in a fist. It's not really a fist, but it's kind of how it would look if you're holding the leash. And then take your arm from there out to 10 o'clock, right? So it's angled, and just lock it there so that you're just not stirring the pot and having your arm all over the place when the dog's trying to figure out what you want. So we want the dog to be able to move off properly. And that does mean that you need to be aware of your body movement and how you're moving. If you're taking little choppy steps, if you're bouncing around too much, all of that can affect how the dog's going to look. Your movement needs to be clean, and the dog's movement needs to be clean. If you're running with a dog, I recommend that you take a few big stride steps, walking steps first, and then go into your trot. If you're training a dog that in the ring you're going to have to run with, like a sporting dog or something, you know, a lot of times the dog is fine when you're walking, but then when you start running, it's like all bets are off and they start running and jumping. So usually what I have people do is once the dog is really good with you walking, you throw in a couple of trotting steps. And before the dog even has an opportunity to run, you click and go back to walking and feed. You walk, 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 trot, trot, click, walk, feed. So you're just kind of peppering in that running movement, and then you're bringing it right back down before the dog has an opportunity to, like, you know, blast off into space. So, but you do want to work on clean movement. You want to make sure that the dog understands how to sort of take those left turns around the ring so they're not tripping into you. So those are all things you want to practice. We have lots of tools for doing that and lots of different ways we work on it. But generally, when I'm starting with a new dog or a new puppy, I will just work the dog in big circles to the right, because it's harder to gallop or jump or pace when they're going at that angle. So I'll just start walking in big circles to the right, because that's easier for the dog and the person, clicking and treating often for all of that movement. And then also right turn, big, right circle. Then I'll throw in a little straight line. Whoop, straight line, click, feed, back to my circle. Circle, circle, straight line, click, feed, circle. And I'm also feeding during these big circles. And once the dog's getting it, I'll flip around and kind of start doing big left-handed turns. And that's how I start. And it's just a lot of reinforcement. And I realize that sometimes right when the dog is moving right, the people don't want to stop and pay, because they're like, he was just getting it, now we're stopping. And it's like, yeah, because you otherwise the dog is guessing. If you're not reinforcing him for the correct behavior, he's guessing. He doesn't really know what you want. So pay him for it, so that we want, as I always say, dogs who are moving with intention. I want them to know what they're doing. They're doing this intentionally, purposefully, because they're trained to do it. They're not just dangling around at the end of our lead. The next behavior is standing, or in the show ring, we call it stacking. And that just means the dog being in the correct position for his breed. You want the straight legs, or the front legs straight down, coming in a plumb line straight down from the dog's shoulder. So it's going to come right down. You don't want it to be bent back. You don't want it to be angled forward. Those front legs should be coming straight down. And the rear legs are going to be, you know, it depends on the breed, how far back you're going to take them. But basically, you want that hock, from the hock joint down, the metatarsus, you want that perpendicular to the ground. So you want that part up and down. And this can take some work because we want the dog to do it when he's on his own, free stack, meaning we don't put him in that position, and then also a hand stack where we physically manipulate the dog. I developed a technique called the focused hand stack where I actually have food sitting out in front of the dog and I just move one leg at a time. So I've got food sitting out in front of the dog at eye level or just above eye level so he can see it, but he doesn't think he can get it. And I can reach it. So if I'm working with a dog on the table, the dog would be on the table. If I'm working with the dog on the ground, I either have them on platforms or just on the ground. And what I'm going to do is like walk him into that stack, or if it's a table dog, set him on the table. I'm going to not use a clicker for this. I'm going to use a verbal marker. So as soon as I get him on the table, yes, give him a treat. If he's very wiggly, I might have to just pause for a moment. Yes, give him a treat. Yes, give him a treat. So he just understands that being still is reinforcing. I can reinforce him for that. Then I'm going to move a front leg. Yes, and give him a treat. Now, if he's wiggling all over the place, I can't go further than that. I have to get him to where I can just move that leg and he keeps it still. Once I can do that, I can move the other front leg. Yes, give him a treat for that. Move that leg. Yes, give him a treat. As soon as he can hold it, I'll start to run my hand back and then move his back leg on the judge's side. So there are some people that are like, you must stack the dog this way. This leg, this leg, this leg, this leg, this leg. I tend to do the front leg on the judge's side and then the front leg on my side and then the back leg on the judge's side and then the back leg on my side. But ideally, if I set the dog on the table, I'm going to try and set him up so I don't have to do much repositioning. That's the goal, is to set him on the table thoughtfully so I put down as many feet as possible into the proper position. If it's a big dog, then you want to walk him into a stack and hopefully he can do the same thing, you know, learn how to walk into it. And so you maybe you only have to reposition one leg. Now, sometimes a dog will just be a really good free stacker. I still think they should be learned to be hand stacked or taught to be hand stacked because one, I may need to just reach down and fix a leg one time. And if he doesn't know how to do that, he's going to wig out in the ring. And also a lot of judges will reposition a leg. So I need my dogs to be really super comfortable and confident with that. So that's how I do hand stacking. And after that, I'm going to teach them to stay. I do utilize stacking boxes a lot. Always low where the dog can choose to get off. It's a game. If the stacking boxes are down at my house, dogs are on them. So they're never down. They have to be put up because it's something they want to do. It's never something I would never tie them up on a noose and groom them up there or make them be up there for a long period of time or create any fatigue. It's really like a muscle memory exercise to remind the dog where their feet go. For free stacking, that I do use a clicker for. I start off by just teaching the dog to offer stands. So my puppies are always taught that stand is their default behavior. So the default behavior is the behavior the dog does when he doesn't know what else to do. So if I've not said what to do, a lot of my dogs are going to sit down. That's their default. It's the first thing they learned. It's very strong. And that's the behavior they're going to give me. So with show dogs, I teach them stand first. So if they don't know what to do, they're just going to stand there and look at me. Because frequently, especially with people who get nervous in the ring, if you have a strong reinforcement history of sit and you've had your dog sit to get his cookie, sit to get his food bowl, sit to wait, sit to get the leash on, then sits become a good thing. And when he's in the show ring and you're nervous and not giving him enough feedback, or maybe you're acting a little weird or quiet because you're nervous, he's probably going to sit. So I want stand to be, you know, his default behavior. Once I've taught that, I call it power steering with food, where I put food right in front of the dog's mouth and kind of guide him to step forward or move back. And I teach him step, which means step forward with a front leg and I teach him back, which means back up with a back leg. Now, I angle his head and I step in with my opposite leg for his back legs, because if I want his right rear to go back, I need his head to angle slightly to his left, and I'm going to step in with my right, and that will push that right rear leg back. So it's on the diagonal. See, that's what I mean when I say it's hard to explain it in a podcast, because it's much easier if you watch one of my videos to see that. And then I want to teach him to stand and to stay and hold that position at a distance. So can I get a couple feet away from you, and can you hold that position with me a few feet away from you and for a period of time? So that's your stacking. And then finally, you have to train for the judge's exam. And we do this by just one, starting out with a baby puppy. My dogs get really, really conditioned to touching all over their bodies, looking in their ears, looking in their mouth, touching their paws, touching their testicles if it's a boy. I always teach what I call heads up cues. So before I show their mouth, I say mouth. Whether I'm going to do it or the judges are going to do it, really the judges are supposed to have you do it now, but still sometimes some judges either forget or just do it and they just go in there. So whether it's going to be someone else doing it to my dog or I'm doing it, I'm going to say to my dog, mouth please, and that lets them know someone's about to open your mouth. For the testicles, I will put it on cue, something like steady, and that just means someone's going to touch your testicles, because a lot of dogs don't like that. But anything that they're not comfortable with, we can teach them to be more comfortable with it, one, by desensitizing it and pairing it with something the dog likes, but also by giving him a heads up and letting him know this is about to happen. When I say steady, someone's going to touch your testicles. And I literally do that by me, no judge around, at home saying steady, and then running my hand down and touching, and then giving a cookie. Steady, running my hand down, touching, and giving a cookie. Steady, run my, till the dog is comfortable with it. If there's any piece of the exam that your dog doesn't like, please, please don't force them. I mean, this idea of like the dog doesn't want to have, you know, his teeth checked. So let's go to a dog show and make everybody look at his teeth. I mean, he just said he wasn't comfortable. So now you're going to have a bunch of strangers doing it. You're literally validating his concerns. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to actually teach him to be okay with that. Starting out with teaching that heads up cue, mouth, until he's okay with me doing it. And then he's okay with me showing other people it. And then maybe someone else who's a friend who he trusts. Then that person can do it. And we're going to build it up from there. But, you know, I don't believe in just saying you're going to deal with this and I don't care if you're scared, because it's almost always fear-based. People will say, he's not afraid, he just doesn't like it. And it's like, well, why doesn't he like it? Like, then teach him to like it. If the dog doesn't like it, he's not comfortable with it. Whether you want to call it afraid or not, it's like, let's just make him be okay with it. So those are, in a nutshell, in a 19-minute nutshell, those are the behaviors we need to train: gating, stacking, and the judge's exam. And obviously, we have classes and webinars and everything that goes into great detail about this, but I hope this gives you a basic idea of what we want to train our show dogs to do and how we're going to do that. Thanks for listening.